Some of you may remember Carla from last year. She presented on the topic when we were back in Berlin. She's an assistant professor from Aalborg University in Denmark. And she piqued my interest by saying that what she's presenting today is a theory which suggests why there needs to be changes made to the DMA. So it's quite a big topic. So let's please welcome Carla.
Thank you very much, Ben, and thank you everybody for being here. Let's see if you agree by the end of the talk about this very spicy statement. But I would like to start by asking you, how do you understand privacy? What is privacy to you? Any brave participants? Yeah. Great. I don't want data to be public when I don't consent to it. Love that. Anybody else? Yes.
I own my data.
Sorry, what?
I own my data.
Yes. These are very valid perspectives on privacy that we see every day and has been discussed in very different disciplines, psychology, social science, law. But today, I'm going to introduce a different theory, a different conceptual framework about privacy that is called contextual integrity. And this is a conceptual framework proposed by an American professor called Helen Nissenbaum. In this part of the talk, I'm not going to talk about anything that I did. I hope I do justice to Nissenbaum's proposal, which says that what we feel as a privacy violation or not depends on the context of that data being shared. So instead of asking, for example, should the data be public or private, or should the data be considered personal or sensitive, should systems ask for consent to access this data or not, or who owns the data, what Nissenbaum proposes is that we ask, when do people perceive that sharing data constitutes a privacy violation? And the answer is, well, it depends. And it depends on the context of where this information is being shared. Now, context is a bit of a big word. So what Nissenbaum also tries to do is to operationalize this idea of context in terms of information flows. So instead of focusing on understanding what data is being shared, she proposes to think of how the data flows from the moment a sender shares it to the moment it's received by a receiver. And to understand these information flows in a structured way, there are these five parameters: the sender, the receiver, the subject. The subject is who the information is about. An information type, what kind of information is being shared. And there's this fifth parameter that is a little bit trickier to understand. It's called a transmission principle. And what a transmission principle does is to constrain the information flow in some way or to express in what conditions this data is flowing from the sender to the receiver. So an example could be, we can think of this privacy rule that a doctor can access a patient's health records as long as they keep them confidential. So here we see the patient as the sender of information. The information type is the health records. They are health records about the patient. The doctor would be the receiver, and the transmission principle that is constraining this information flow is that the doctor keeps it confidential. So when I look at all these parameters about how information flows, then I can ask, do I feel that this information flow is appropriate? If I feel that this is appropriate, then I can say this aligns with my privacy expectations. If this information flow doesn't feel appropriate somehow, This is what Nissenbaum says that we perceive as a privacy violation. So let me put it in a different example. So I work in Denmark, and they say that 2025 is the year to see the Northern Lights. So I've been looking for Northern Lights forecast apps. So let's say that in my role as an aurora hunter, I install one of these apps, and the app is the app wants to use my location data for telling me the forecast in my city. And for doing this, the app has to ask for a permission to access the location data. So this permission being granted becomes the transmission principle that constrains the information flow. The app is not going to use my location whenever it wants. It only uses it if I grant the permission. So I can see the parameters of this information flow here and think, well, if the location data is only used for the forecast in my city and I grant the permission, then yeah, sure, it feels appropriate. It aligns with my privacy expectations. But what if the app also uses my physical activity data? It's a different information type, then it starts becoming a little bit harder to understand, like, why a Northern Lights forecast app would need to know how many steps I did today. And this is an example where I can ask myself again, is this information flow feeling appropriate? Well, not really, because this information type doesn't make sense with the app that I'm using. And this would be a privacy violation at the information type level. And it's important to know that this happens even if I grant a permission. So contextual integrity is very much about describing when do we feel privacy violations, not so much about what makes it legal or not. We can hope that regulations try to get as close as possible to what people feel that they are their privacy expectations. But these are two different things. So, for example, if I look a little bit in more details into this app and I read the privacy policy, and the privacy policy says that even the location data is used for marketing and advertising purposes, well, that's not the purpose that I thought, that's not the purpose that I was considering as part of the transmission principle of this information flow. So here we see that even if I go and accept the privacy policy stating this, regardless of whether I read it or not, there is a privacy violation in terms of my privacy expectations are not aligning with how this information flows. So where do these feelings of privacy violations come from? They come from entrenched social norms that prescribe what we perceive as appropriate purposes for the data that we share. And it's important to really understand that this is coming from social norms. They are very entrenched, very rooted in our society, because it could happen that in different cultures, social norms are different, then the privacy expectations about information flows might also differ. And this is why it's so important to understand, to think in terms of social norms and social values to understand where these feelings of privacy violations come from. So that was the basics of contextual integrity as a conceptual framework proposed by Nissenbaum. From now on, you're going to hear about maybe my ideas of how this is relevant for assessing privacy in communication apps. Let's say that we have Alice using this app, Texty, to chat with her friend. And Alice is chatting about her political opinions and is actually disclosing who she voted for in the last presidential elections. Now, this is a pretty sensitive type of information being shared, but the transmission principle that is making Alice trust that this information flow aligns with the privacy expectations is that, well, friends don't gossip about friends. So Alice is thinking of her friend and is trusting her friend. And if her friend suddenly forwards a message to someone else, then they would be going against her privacy expectations. There would be a violation of the friends don't gossip about friends principle. It could even be like outside of messaging apps, the friend talks about it. There would be a violation of this principle. But it actually becomes a little bit more complex because this is not really how it works at the technical level. What actually happens is that before her friend becomes a receiver in this information flow, Alice's political views first go through Texty servers. Then Texty as a company becomes a receiver first. And here we can think of, if we want to understand what are Alice's expectations of privacy in this situation, maybe we can think of the social norms that would be similar to a context like this. And that makes me think that I would expect my mailman not to grab my correspondence and look inside. So Alice, we can assume that Alice, based on her social norms, is expecting something similar from Texty. There needs to be some restriction, a transmission principle that says that Texty is not going to process her messages other than to deliver it. So we can think that maybe Texty can state this in the privacy policy, saying Texty as a company, data processing in an agreement, is only going to transmit messages, and it's not going to process messages for any other purposes. But something cool is that there is actually a technological way to enforce this transmission principle. So we could think that there are also transmission principles at the technological level, at the infrastructure level, that could help make sure that Alice's expectations of privacy align with how information actually flows. So great there, end-to-end encryption. Now, what about interoperable messaging? Before talking about interoperability, I would like to first talk about two separate apps and the values behind the design of these apps. And I'm going to do this to the best of my understanding. Let's say that we have Facebook Messenger here, which in the last couple of years activated end-to-end encryption by default. And Messenger has a bunch of other features, and as a designer of communication functionality, I actually love the reactions and customizable themes and this and that. But today, for the purpose of discussing contextual integrity, I'm going to focus on things that relate more to privacy. And what's really important to point out is that Messenger and Meta overall place a lot of importance on keeping users safe from abuse, from bullying, from harassment, from scams, and other malicious behavior. So we could think of this as Messenger taking the responsibility of keeping users safe from each other. And for this, Messenger takes a number of measures. So first, it lets users report messages with malicious content or users, for example. And when a user reports a message, this message travels in plain text form to Meta so that moderators can look at it and judge if it aligns with their community standards or not. And they take this so seriously that even if those messages are deleted, users can still report them within the first 6 hours. So let's say that Bob receives a harassment message and the harasser deletes it right away. Bob can still report this within 6 hours. And in line with these safety measures, Messenger also retains metadata to be able to detect other malicious behavior. And if the police comes wanting to do an investigation, they can offer this metadata to help in the investigation. Now, on the other hand, we have this new hypothetical app called Chatty. Chatty is also end-to-end encrypted, but is run by an organization that deeply cares about individual privacy. So what this means is that they take data minimization very seriously, and because they want to minimize the collection of data as much as possible, they also don't allow users to report messages, because they don't want to have any kind of plain text content on their hands. And in line with this, deleted messages are deleted immediately and forever. You may have guessed, metadata is not retained. So if the police comes with a warrant for an investigation, they have nothing to offer. What we're seeing here is that, in contrast to how Messenger's values are prioritizing online safety and accountability, Chatty is designed to prioritize individual privacy. And we can see how these values in both cases are shaping the messaging protocols themselves and the functionality that sustains and governs how people communicate in each platform. Technology is not neutral. It embodies social values and social norms. Now, let's imagine that Chatty wants to interoperate with Messenger as enabled by the Digital Markets Act. And what the Digital Markets Act says is that when they designate a messaging platform as a gatekeeper, which are these very big platforms that I don't know how many millions, 45 million users or something like that per month in Europe, they need to have in order to be considered a gatekeeper. The DMA asks these gatekeepers to implement an interoperability API so that smaller competitors can interoperate with their users and break network effects in that way. The thing is that how this would be translated to at the infrastructure level as enabled by the DMA. So now let's imagine that Charlie wants to send a message to Bob from Chatty to Messenger. The message would not go through Chatty's servers. It would go through a separate interoperability server provided by Meta. So what's happening here is that when the DMA places the responsibility of defining and providing this API on Messenger, it's also giving Messenger the power to dictate what are the values that govern interoperable communication. So when Charlie uses Chatty to talk with Bob, the transmission principles that he's used to rely on while using Chatty don't apply anymore. The transmission principles of the interoperable information flow are the ones defined by Meta. I strongly believe that this makes contextual integrity extremely challenging, if not impossible, to achieve in interoperable conversations as stated right now under the DMA. Users are already struggling with keeping track of the different privacy policies of all the 5+ apps that they use. They already struggle in understanding the different implementations of privacy features in one app and the other. Maybe they have similar names, but they work differently. And now, in this scenario, we're expecting them to have different privacy expectations for different contacts in the same client. It's a lot to put in the hands of users to even be aware of, is the communication platform that I'm using aligned with my privacy expectations or not? So if Charlie assumes that the same transmission principles apply when chatting with Bob or when chatting with other Chatty users, that's where contextual integrity breaks. So again, the way information flows in interoperable chats and the values that govern interoperable communication right now are defined by Meta and may be perceived as privacy violations when Chatty users chat with Messenger users. What a mess. So, what can we do? Well, I can also say that it depends. what I'm going to say is that this is a huge challenge, and I'm actually here sharing this with you because I want to first see, do you agree that this is a challenge? Is thinking in terms of contextual integrity helping to understand what constitutes a privacy violation or not? Is it giving us better vocabulary to explain the kinds of clashes of values and privacy expectations that can happen, not just in this type of interoperability, but also in decentralized communication? I love bridges, but you can imagine how this would apply to bridges. What I think is that there are some design directions that really need to be explored. First, I think it's very important to start thinking in terms of what values shape each interoperating app. Where do these values disagree with each other? How are these values shaping the actual messaging protocols that native users are used to? And how can each side be aware of the differences? So, and something that goes maybe an idea that goes a little bit of against the current of a lot of design trends is that, yes, the infrastructure of decentralized and interoperable messaging is a mess. So, of course, we want the experience to be seamless. But if it's too seamless, users are not going to have the means to understand if their privacy expectations are aligned with that infrastructure. So what if instead of being 100% seamless, we are starting to be strategically seamful? And when I talk about seams, it's like the seams here in this jacket that stitch different parts together. So I think, for example, it's really, really important for any kind of interoperable messaging that users know that they are chatting with a foreign user. So at the very least, even if they don't know what other rules apply on the other side, they know that there's a difference. And there should be distinct privacy policies for interoperable chats and for native chats, but perhaps it would be nice to stress the differences when accepting the privacy policy instead of the privacy policies separately. And last, I think it's fair to wonder if this is really a design problem or a regulatory problem, and this is why I think that applying this privacy theory to interoperable messaging makes me realize that the DMA, as it is right now, placing all power on the gatekeepers to define what values matter in communication, I think it's not the way, and I think it's not going to work. But I think we can still think as a design challenge, how can protocols and user interface help users understand these differences or even negotiate the values that apply for their particular communication? This is it. I'm leaving some key takeaways here. But thank you very much for listening, and I'm really excited to discuss this with you. Thanks.
Super stuff. Thank you, Carla. Do we have questions in the room? Yeah, there's one.
Hi, thanks for the talk. to support the DMA, let's say if the chat in the example was Matrix and the Messenger was Messenger, is it still DMA compliant if Messenger start to integrate the whole Matrix stack in the application in a way that if a user is in Matrix, you directly send the content over the Matrix protocol, and if not, you use the Messenger? Is it still DMA compliant?
I think I'm not an expert on the legal terms, but my intuition wants me to say yes. But again, if we also think about not just about how to comply with the law, but about how to give people more power to align their privacy expectations with the infrastructure that says how the information flows, probably would be very interesting instead of having a fixed DMA API if there were also options for users to decide, okay, with this person on this other platform, we want to communicate under this protocol because it aligns with both of our values. I think that's, I don't know, it's a huge challenge and needs a lot of discussion. I hope that helps in the answer.
Yes, thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, it seems like the big thing is expectation is the key, right? So,
thank you. It's really interesting with everything that you're talking about. Maybe just not a question or a comment, just an idea, just, you know, like expanding on your thoughts. I agree with maybe the API, like right now we communicate with different platforms in different ways and everything is secure. Well, you know, like we talk about grants, right, between in one application and another application. Maybe that API could be another sort of expansion of those grants, but including that policy in each conversation between applications. I don't know, I'm just kind of expanding. Just wanted to say thank you.
That's great, and it's a great idea. And actually, I came to apply contextual integrity to interoperable messaging thanks to another work that is still ongoing that I'm doing with the same collaborators of the research I'm presenting at 240. We are using also contextual integrity to understand how people might confuse features or measures that are called the same in different apps. If you tell me that this app is secure and this other app is secure, but they actually mean different things, of course, users are going to have similar expectations for very different implementations. I think thinking along those lines is very useful, even outside of interoperable messaging.
More a comment and a question from my side. I think the points you mentioned about DMA applies to the metrics ecosystem in general. So, for example, users might expect that they can delete a message, but maybe their client and their home server deletes the message, but another client or another home server keeps them, or adds a report functionality that sends the message in clear text to the home server administrator. That's all possible, and you can't really know anything if you just send a message and assume that other home servers and other clients behave like yours.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for understanding it so well. Yes. So this is why I'm here sharing about this, because I think it's very, very relevant for all sorts of interoperability. You are absolutely right. And that's why I also mentioned with bridges, for example, I love how smart the idea is. But from a contextual integrity point of view, my WhatsApp contacts don't know that I'm messaging them from somewhere else. If an IRC person connects to an Element conversation, their conversation is being logged in another app while they think that their communication is ephemeral. And that there's all, when you start thinking in these ways, you can really put into these five parameters why privacy expectations might break. Even for decentralized communication with the same client, there are even issues there. It's a huge challenge.
So we're running a little long. We have one more question, I think. Is that right?
Yes, question or...
Hi!
Hello. Carla, thank you very much for your talk. I always enjoy your talks. You're really putting the nail on the head. No, you know what I mean? I think, again, and I often feel that it's your subject, is the difference or the scale between security and convenience.
Mm.
And I think that's if I think of like how long it took to raise an idea about email should be encrypted and that sort of thing. And I think the idea you describe with how the messages, like what you described with the Criminal Justice Act, and how the gatekeepers are still dictating the encryption and dictating how things are I don't think that that will be changed in the long run, because I think that also the Digital Market Act is a Digital Market Act and not a Digital Interoperability Act.
I agree.
What it really does is to kind of trying to break the monopoly of these gatekeepers, but not allowing... really allowing interoperability.
Yes. I know I should
get into.
But then we could raise the hypothesis of.
Yes.
Will the DMA really break network effects?
Yes. Get on your soapbox.
If it introduces new privacy violations.
Yes, and I think that a lot of the lobbying for a generalized encryption protocol is really going the wrong way. And I'm sorry, but I do a little bit of advertising in my own space now, because this problem is exactly what we're working on a PolyChat.
Excellent.
And what we're doing at the moment is we're kind of trolling the gatekeepers, because the information we pass on is pseudonymized. Like this idea, I'm just throwing comments on it. Also, there's this thing about chat control, and I think your issue about constraining and not passing on the data information is actually like...
chat control is completely changing the transmission principles that one would take for granted. Yeah. Yes.
And I think
to talk about chat control, maybe you can also come to my following talk.
I think we should all get on our soapboxes and fight for interoperability, because it is a user right.
I agree. Thank you very much, everyone.
All right, great. Thank you. Sorry that we ran out of time there.